Hello and welcome to the Multimedia Men podcast number 29.
Cinnamon roll.
No. Cinnamon roll. How is that cinnamon roll?
Excellent.
But I am doing other slides.
They're mini ones.
Oh, mini.
They're so cute. Are they doughy?
Yeah.
Describe them in really gross detail for me, please.
They're, well, there's a white sugary substance.
They're covered.
Coated all
splattered
over it.
All over the top.
Splattered is a good way. It does look like it's been splattered upon.
Yes.
It's quite doughy, but with that sweet, sugary taste, it's good.
Yeah.
It softens the palate. Tongue drops a little
bit. The other
bit,
day was
good.
The Friday was pie day.
Don't ask for it. Pie day.
And I saw somebody on Instagram went to have pie, and this pie crust that she had was made out of cinnamon rolls, and I was like, I need to have that in my mouth.
That's what she said.
But I already cheated this week. I had pie.
But
I had pie on Thursday instead of on.
It was pie the number, not pie.
Yeah, 3.14.
Every day is pie day.
So.
Yeah.
P-I-E, pie day.
I wasn't being funny. I was being serious.
I know. It was 3.14. Ides of March was yesterday, y'all. Did anyone get stabbed?
Yep. I'm talking to you guys from...
E2.
Metaphorically stabbed.
Brute? I had a friend ask what the hell that was, and I was like, are you fucking retarded? Did you not go to
school?
It's a movie.
Like,
it's
called Shakespeare, asshole. It's, you read it in
school. We were having a conversation about that yesterday, about how, like, some people don't know what the annul... Oh, my brother went to the Air and Space Museum with some of his coworkers in D.C., and they didn't know what the Enola Gay was. And I was like... I'm an idiot, and I know what the Enola Gay is. I don't know I don't know what the other one that hit Nagasaki was, but I know which one Enola Gay was.
Which one hit which place?
Big Enola Man, Gay Batman. Did. Enola Gay did Hiroshima. I don't remember which one did. Sorry, history lessons of life.
Sadly,
it's all good.
Japanese,
but that's a great leeway
to this. We're doing this is our 29th podcast. We're almost at the 30 mark for 30 weeks. Next week, we'll
damn, we're old.
I'm Brian Kluger. I'm with Gadi Elkan.
Howdy,
Andrew Conway.
Yep.
Adam Conway.
Hey, what's up?
And Gwen Reyes.
Hello.
And we're going to do a top three, as we usually do, top three list. And it's going to be the top three books we've read that we would love to tell everybody about. That we just,
ooh,
we can't.
That are more like life-changing.
We just want to tell everybody, like, read this book. It's
this
so good.
It's really hard to do.
I don't want anyone to know about this one.
Shades of Grey.
I have 100 books.
100 books. So I'm going to start with Gwen, since she's the resident book
to say the best
over 40 graphic
dirty books, right?
Yeah, they're all dirty.
Dirty books.
Well, and that's what it's funny because I do have to read a lot of books for work, and I love reading. I love movies and TV more than I love reading, but I do love to read. But I went with kind of a theme of like the books that changed me and that still affect me and make me think still to this day. So a couple of them are some of them are YA books. The first one I picked was, I did four. Because that's how I roll.
Do you have an honorable mention?
Yes, I do. I'm going to start with the smutty books, and then I'll go to the important books. But erotica has been part of the landscape of art forever and ever and ever. But there's been a resurgence of popular erotica, thanks to 50 Shades of Grey. But before 50 Shades of Grey, there was an author named Emma Hawley, who was writing really, really smart, sexy, erotic romances back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And she was actually not getting published in America. She's an American author, but she was getting more published in England because they like kink. And her stuff was... It's still like, I'll go back and reread some of her books, and I'm still impressed with her words, like the way that she's able to describe these beautiful romances of these couples finding each other, and then it's just super smutty and super, super erotic.
So what's the book first?
The book is, the one I picked is my favorite Emma Hawley book, is called Personal Assets.
And why?
Well, it was...
What's the best sex scene in there?
The best sex scene... See, it's hard because they
that's
all...
What she
kind
said.
Of, so what they are is, it's about... A young man and a young woman who are, he is actually her stepfather, but it's because he's the younger kept boy that marries her mom and the mom dies. And she is an heir to like, essentially like the Lancome makeup franchise. And he's running the company and she's like just finishing college. And she's like, well, I want to take some ownership of my business because I own it, but he's been running it now that the mom's been dead. And so they come in, and they've always been kind of drawn to each other because they're closer in age. And so they have like this whirlwind love affair. But then on the other side, her best friend goes to run one of the boutiques in New York City and falls in love with like a George Clooney-esque sort of guy, but he's like big business. So it's got this whole, the really common romantic trope of inner office love.
But what's the best sex scene?
The best sex scene. Okay.
That's what we want to know.
There's a really great one in the back. Yeah. There's a really great one in the back of a limo that was really, really nice.
In New York?
No, in Paris. And then
in Paris.
Yeah. And then the one in New York was because she was, the best friend was working for their lingerie company. And so it was like this whole teasing sort of, she was dressing for him and he's like this big, powerful, anyway, it's very, I love that book. I still read that book.
So what's the draw for men or women to read these smuttier books?
What I like, because the other one that I picked is called Beautiful Bastards by Christina Loren, which is another, which is another like office place romance. But what's interesting about that is the power dynamic and being able to take something that is, you would normally just think is just like supposed to be just pure sex, but actually infusing it with really interesting characters, really funny, witty dialogue. And it's impressive that these are books that are published and they have this really big audience in the, romance is the number one genre. It is 56% of the market. Is romance novels, and that's what I prefer to read. So those two, and then another one. I know this is kind of silly because it's a TV show now, but when it first came out, it was like the only young adult that wasn't like literary young adult available, and that was L.J. Smith's The Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
It's a TV show now, everybody knows, but the TV show and the books aren't similar except for like the character names. But those were books that I remember I would go to Walden Bookstore and the young adult section was literally like a shelf. And it was like what I called the death books that were all about like a character who had cancer and finding love before one of them died.
Aww.
And then these L.J. Smith books. And she had this. She had another series about psychic vampires. She had another series about witches. And I love that. And that's, it's interesting to see those books that were published in the early 90s and how they have influenced an entire world and genre of young adult series. Like everybody, all these authors that we know, like Stephanie Meyer and Veronica Roth and all these authors that are making big successes now with like Divergent and all these, they were reading these books. They were getting their inspiration from these books. And she's been able to still make headway in for these books that are 30 years old.
And do you recommend these books to people?
I do. I always recommend The Vampire Diaries. The one I like more than The Vampire Diaries is the Dark Visions one because it's a little bit, it's got really great sexual tension in it because she used to be a romance author and she switched into young adult. So she has that ability to work within the constraints of like your characters can only kiss and make it really, really like the characters are so rich and wonderful. And then the most important book, keeping with the young adult for me, is Lois Lowry's The Giver, which is going to be made into a movie finally.
They came out a while ago.
Yeah, this book also, same time as The Vampire Diaries, early 90s. And this is a book about it's not post-apocalyptic, but like a utopian society that they're all living in this great world. So if you think like 1984, Brave New World, and there's you this one kid has to choose between like knowing all the history of their compound or not. And so it's all about arguing the power of knowledge. And it's such a great book. I think we all had to read it in like middle school, but it's one of those books I read and I was like, this is fucking amazing. And then Lois Lowry was so interesting. She wrote that book, which won like a Newbery Award. And then she wrote, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Interesting.
And so she was all over the map. But then she's still writing books, too. She had another Giver book come out last year.
So it's a series.
It is a series, yeah. The first one's really the only good one you need to read. I don't really think the other ones are that great. But
all right. Any others?
No, those are pretty much the... I mean, besides like classics like Jane Austen and Great Expectations, which are two books I really, really love. I also really love Rebecca.
I read that in 6th or 7th grade.
Such a sad
I really
book.
Liked Rebecca.
Sad, depressing it's good stuff. Books. And also Johnny Tremaine.
Oh, yeah.
I think
Johnny Tremaine.
Alfred Hitchcock did Rebecca.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
It was really, really good.
Were the red
the silversmith accident. Let's say.
But I thought it was so funny because then at the end they're like, we could just cut you open. And it's like, why didn't you do that from the beginning? Yeah. But he had to learn how to live his life without...
Cool. Well, that's Gwen's list. Let's move to Gotti. Gotti, what's your book list? What books do you want to tell us to read?
I'm glad Gwen's kept it in like modern and didn't go classics, because I agree. Like, I think we've all read majority of the classics.
Yeah.
Or told people we've read
I have all the classics on mine. So.
Well, then that's good. Later on, you can shore us up with the classics. You should be last, then. Cause we'll be
what are your classics, Gotti?
I don't want to be last.
All mine are pretty modern. I have five. So
that's fine. Go for it.
And I'll start with my two honorable mentions, just because I think these are they're bigger authors than my top three, selling wise. But so I guess that's weird. But anyways, number five is just because it's the only book that every time I read the damn book I cry, and it's a short enough read where you can read it yearly, like I do. Mitch Albom's "The Five People You Meet in Heaven" is still the most jarring, quick such little short story. About a heaven that I would rather see happen than the majority of the religious crap heavens out there. It's a realistic how you look back on your life. It's obviously a guy who, with Tuesdays with Maury, blew up, but his sports writing, his articles are amazing, and his ability to showcase nostalgia in a fun way, I guess, is... I just got emotional. It's so good.
What time of year do you like to read that book?
I'm getting
fairly specific.
During the holidays.
Before the NFL season opens?
Yeah, well, during the holidays. Like, I think it's a good... And it's... I've tricked it up where I've read it just different time periods. Like, it's a book I hope to read every year. Like, it's that weird book that is short enough and quick enough and sweet enough you can get through it. But every damn time I cry in the same exact spots, it's really annoying. I can't get through those.
I'm not a big rereader. That's my one flaw.
I don't reread a lot, but that book... That was one of those books where you... Like, I think I read it... Right as it came out, and it was like, well, fuck, I have to read this now. It's such a poignant story. It's a guy who has five people he meets, and they tell him his life, essentially, and it's heartbreaking. It's good stuff. So
what else you got?
I like short stories, if y'all going to get a theme. My favorite author of all time is Flannery O'Connor, and I grew up reading O. Henry, so all those twisty twists, like, forget the Gift of Magi bullshit, like, all his, like, quality... murder mystery ones. He was a cool dude. Look up the history of O. Henry. You'll see a pimp. But my other...
Slaps people around. Is that what you're saying to me?
Essentially. He is there.
The candy bar magnet.
So the other book... I'm still reading this book. I can't get through this damn book. It's so long and beautiful. It's about the great President Woodrow Wilson.
No, I've talked about it before. For a long time.
A. Scott Berg. It's about 1,700 pages.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio's making that into a
And movie. I think it's going to be DiCaprio's best film, and he'll win an Oscar. I'm going to go ahead and call it. Because Woodrow Wilson's life is one of the most fascinating lives, not just of presidents, men who are important to our country. Princeton wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. Half the Ivy League thought schools would not have their way of doing schooling. He invented Ivy League schools, essentially. The guy's incredible. And the League of Nations, all that, League of United Nations, all that, that's secondary to
those are the kind of things I wish that they did audiobooks for that. Because I think that'd be so great to listen to.
I want to hear, like,
while you're walking,
someone
driving around.
It's so...
Nonfiction, for me, works so much better as an audiobook. I can't get into reading it.
What's amazing is how exciting his life is. And, like, A. Scott Berg, he's a really good journalist. He's written a lot of stuff, like The Atlantic, and, like, he's written some really fascinating pieces. And he does these big-time people biographies, like he did Lindenberg. And if you really want a biographer that I think is the best biographer right now, go read A. Scott Berg.
He's the one that did, who does, like, all the other president ones, like, that did Jefferson and did Scott Adams.
There's a guy from Texas who does a few.
McCall.
He interviewed...
Yeah, didn't he do, like...
David McCullough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did...
1776.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did this one about Parisian expatriates in at the turn of the century. So it was, like, F. Scott and Hemingway. It's really good.
I would have, that whole frame when they were all there together with, like, the Fitzgeralds and all that was ridiculous. So, A. Scott, just because I love the book, I can't get through the damn book, but if you can get it, keep it because it'll take you years to read the damn thing.
Do you think Leonardo DiCaprio's finished the book? Or do you think he's still reading it too?
I think he's probably rereading it because I think he's a type to get into it. I know he must think that's his opus. Like telling the Woodrow Wilson story because it's never been done on film yet.
It'd be really cool.
So, and that time frame, like early 1900s into the 20s, is one of the coolest time periods ever in American history. Mm-hmm. Everything started. Music was revitalized. Alcohol. Everything about living the life was
like
was
that
started.
Time period interests me so much. And then also Revolutionary War interests me because I love the whole idea of just like this small group of rebels and turncoats who then.
I'm looking forward to Turn, by the way.
What else you
chance,
got?
Though.
But I'm going to give it a chance.
Needs to grow.
Yeah.
So, my top three books, they're three very kind of aloof and hidden authors. The number three guy, his book is actually going to be a movie by one of the best directors around. The great Thomas Pynchon with Inherent Vice is easily one of the funnest, most entertaining detective stories. He's a 50-something. He'll be younger. I guess he's Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
But it's flawless. It's about a pothead detective. It's fucking hilarious. And it's... Pynchon is known for such more cerebral books. And
a lot of 49, right?
Yeah. And, like, more Vonnegut than, you know, Clancy. You know what I mean? Like, so much more intelligent writing. But this was such a... I'm going to write a story about the dude as a detective. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell it in my way, and I'm going to give you a look into the 70s, into the 80s, into now, like you've never seen before. And it's got twists through it that come out of nowhere. I haven't read a book where I was like, what the hell just happened, as much as I was in Inherent Vice. I think the movie could be flawless. And if it's not my favorite, like most anticipated film, it's at least a top three. So the book's incredible. If you haven't read the book, it's a quick read. It's not very long either, and it's funky and fun. And there's a lot of weird, crazy characters. Like, all the people that are going to be supporting characters are going to steal the show in this movie. Because the book, they stole the show.
Yeah.
So many crazy drug dealers and crazy shit. And I kind of had a tie because there's a lot of British authors I like Layer Cake.
that's one of my favorites.
But I knocked him off because I think Pynchon just... He's another level with his intelligence and his writing. Like, he's beyond Elmore Leonard.
I feel like it takes so much talent to be, like, a cerebral genre writer.
Yeah.
To bring, like, a level of intelligence to genre fiction.
Because how much do you fear, like, going past that audience? Like, so many people are expecting the Elmore Leonard, you know, hit
point. Well, that's why it works, why it transcends. Like, there's nothing wrong with genre. Like, I prefer genre fiction to literary fiction, but... There's something really, really... That's why I love Never Let Me Go. Because that's a genre book that is just on another level. It's a horror book on another level. Like, Joyce Carol Oates does that, too, where it's like, those are horror books or romance novels on just another echelon. Yeah.
I'm definitely a fan.
Sorry, this is a super nerdy conversation.
So my top two are two authors that are from the North. I like this theme. Number two... He's most well known for his short story book, and it's one of my two choices, but I think it's his more recent epic book that is what I love about him. Dennis Johnson, who did Jesus' Son, which was the Billy Crudup movie.
I love
but
that movie. Yeah.
If you've seen the movie, read the book, and you'll understand what visual writing is. He's the most visual, realistic writer I've ever read. I've never ever felt like there wasn't anything that he couldn't describe as an author. He's dark. He's a little kind of out there with his ideas. There's a lot of weirdness in his books, and all of his books are different. He's got another good book, The Name of the World, which is completely different than the stories that are in Jesus' Son. And he also writes poetry, really kind of dark, but somewhat beautiful poetry, like a dark flower, I think is the way he's been described. He's a unique guy, lives in Wyoming, kind of recluse. But has a family, just writes fucking quality shit. And he was out of the Iowa program that all those fuckers who go out there, there's something transcendent about that area because
nothing
there's nothing else
to,
do but write.
Yeah.
And those people that have been out there, I think if you read them compared to the New York beat, you'll understand what, like, looking at the world is about. And I think if you want to see what a force looks like, go read anything Dennis Johnson's ever done. But the book I love, and I'd recommend this book, even more than Jesus' Son, is Tree of Smoke. It won the National Book Award. So, I mean, that alone
elitist.
Puts
good.
You on fucking elitist. It's heartbreaking. It's about the Vietnam War, and it bleeds on. And it's a hard book about war, but not from your... Mm. Doesn't get too much into the violence. It's all memories. It's kind of like The Things You Carry, a short story. And that way it looks at war, all the elements of war, but doesn't get into too much detail.
Which
but
I love. I think that the whole mindset of somebody who goes to war is way more interesting than the actual war itself.
And so many people have written such quality exposition about war. I think like Tim O'Brien and Dennis Johnson have both clued into something deeper, and then they get into, you know, the impact of war on this character. And it's a really difficult story to get through, but you enjoy every moment that you get through another segment. So definitely. So that's number two. Number one, I read this book because I love the title, and I was just in a library and I saw it. And I've read every fucking book this guy's ever done. He has a book coming out in 2 weeks. He's by far my favorite author. And it's because he's got a quirky, weird voice. And I think his view of society...
Who is it?
It is so sardonic and kind of like, we're all fucking screwed. Douglas Copeland. If you haven't heard of Douglas Copeland, he's Canadian. He's weird. He's an artist. And he writes the most poignant stories about growing up. The book I first read and the book everyone should start with, even though it's not technically his first, is Girlfriend in a Coma, which you all should recognize the title. No?
Why yeah. should we?
Cure? No, okay. So it feels like a perfect little story. It's about a girl who goes into a coma and wakes up and she's got a kid to take care of. And she's the mind of her younger self in an aged body with a family that she has to now take care of, and the impact of that, as well as the catalyst for her coma, bleeds back into the story. It's amazing. But the stories I'd recommend, he wrote a book called Eleanor Rigby, which is about a really sad woman named Liz. And if you've ever like felt sad in your life or self-esteem issues, like if you've ever thought about suicide, go read this book and realize your life is not that bad. Because this bitch's life is 10 times worse. And she's as self-aware and yet as bold as you could be with that type of viewpoint of yourself. It's dark, but it's hilarious. He also did a book called Hey Nostradamus, which is told from a couple different perspectives. And Douglas Copeland, smartest writer, I think, out there. And no one gets him other than a couple Canadians and me. But if you get into Douglas
Copeland. I read Eleanor Rigby when I was like in this weird music Chuck Klosterman sort of phase where I was reading Chuck Klosterman, and I read like What We Do Is Secret, and I read A&R, and I was like in this super music phase. I was like, I want to read books with music titles. And that book like broke my heart.
Yeah, that's a theme he has. Is
I was like, I'm done.
The titles
book, like,
and
oh,
the music are in the
so
books.
Is that the book or...
Eleanor Rigby's really good. Hey Nostradamus, Girlfriend at Home is a good place to start.
What's your number one?
Just all of his?
Literally, I've read every book. His latest book before the one that's coming out was called The Gum Thief. It's a good start, but if you had to read just one, Girlfriend in a Coma.
All right.
So Gotti's top 50 books you should read.
Yeah, all by Douglas Copeland.
And now, children, tell me about your Roald
Dahl. All right, Andrew, we'll go with you now.
Okay.
Bastard. You're last.
So, yeah, most of my books are books that I read at a precocious age that have sort of
read to
molded me.
Me
into the Dr. man
Seuss.
That I have become.
Okay.
For the most part. The one book I have on here that I actually read all the way through, that's my problem is I have all of these aspirations to read these amazing books, and I never finish them. One book I finished in the last few years that everyone's going to probably be surprised about is The Time Traveler's Wife.
Oh, did you love it?
I enjoyed
really
it.
The book is
so
better than the movie.
The book is so much better than the movie. So good. And, you know, my sister, you know, dared me to read it. And I went ahead and read it and then watched the movie and was heartbroken how bad the movie was compared to the book.
Yeah.
The book was just so good. So that's one of my runner-ups. Another one of my runner-ups is one that's sort of based in Texas. that it was a series called Hank the Cowdog.
Oh, so good.
By John R. Erickson. And he actually came to my fifth grade class and talked about the
books. He came to ours too, and he brought
Hank. He brought Hank. And so, you know, so I remember that, and I actually remember buying. I think I bought like, you know, book 15 or 16 in the allotted, and ended up there ended up being 63 titles.
Is he still alive?
I'm not sure.
I don't think he is.
But
he was old back then.
He was old.
But it's pretty straightforward what it is. It's Hank. He's a cow dog on a ranch. Owner Slim and all his crazy adventures for protecting the ranch. then another sort of childhood book that doesn't have a lot of words in it, but it definitely I'm sure
she like pictures.
Molded
yeah.
a lot of us. Maurice Sendak, who the wild things are.
Beautiful.
Of course, you know, it's something that stays with you for sure. So
Maurice Sendak did an amazing adaptation of The Nutcracker that is so twisted.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. It's creepy, creepy, creepy. So that's a good one, guys, if you have nieces and nephews to scare the shit out of them.
So my top three, third place for me is another series that I really appreciated growing up, Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah.
By R.L. Stein.
Do you have one that you like the most? Or do you
I like the Haunted Mask was the one that always like was one of my favorites. And there's a bunch of them.
They're making into a movie with Jack Black.
R.L. Stein read Goosebumps in a cemetery last year in Austin, and it fucked with my soul.
Oh. Well, it's awesome. It's one of those
so
things where he took horror and he was able to make it relatable to young adults.
And I loved it, too. He was one of the first ones that hand walked you through. So, like, you had Goosebumps as a kid, and then you did Fear Street, and then you did his adult books.
Yeah. And so it's something that made me enjoy the horror genre a lot more than I probably would have if I didn't have Goosebumps in my life. And then it led me to more adult fare with Anne Rice and her Interview with a Vampire and her whole Vampire Chronicles.
Did you stick through
the whole... I didn't make it to the end. I read pretty much Interview with a Vampire, Lestat, and I started reading Armand, and there were a few other ones. Like
the Queen
of the Damned.
Yeah,
I really love that movie, and then I...
The movie's terrible.
I know, but I love really shitty movies, guys. You know
that.
You combined Mephistopheles and Queen of the Damned into the same movie, basically, so...
Yeah.
That was Aaliyah.
Interview with the Vampire was just...
Died.
Yeah.
That's a great author.
I like the movie.
Yeah.
She writes real good smut, too.
Visually, yeah.
She has some werewolf smut.
She
right
got
now.
Some good smut.
New Orleans.
She's super into her rapist.
And then my number one author, I read pretty much all his books in, you know, middle school, high school, but his first book that I read became one of my favorite movies, is Jurassic Park. Michael Crichton.
It was on my list.
And it's definitely one of those, yeah. And it's one of those books that's so much more detailed and graphic than the movie itself, but both of them are great in its own right. And, it just took you into that world. Michael Crichton does such a good job at taking you into these crazy places that could be sort of based in reality.
The book's so much more darker.
And,
And Michael Crichton's so great.
Sphere's amazing.
I love Sphere. Sphere, Congo.
It's way better than the movie.
Yeah, he has some just, yeah.
You can't capture the
Amy.
Brutality.
Good.
What I liked about Michael Crichton, and the same thing I kind of like about Dan Brown, is that they write books that feel like movies.
Yeah.
They appeal so
you go on this sort of
much.
Journey with all these characters, and yeah, there's definitely highs and lows. And that's
why they translate.
Oh, yeah. And so that Jurassic Park, my number one.
He was a tall guy. Good guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
I like Jurassic Park, the book. It was good.
Sphere's.
I love
fucking
Sphere.
Incredible.
Sphere's awesome.
The
movie, not so much, but
the book.
The book's
amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah.
He's just a great, great writer.
So
spoiler alert, the guy that wrote. I think Cowdog is still alive, and they're making a film next year.
Yay!
Really?
Yeah.
Live action? Or,
I don't know.
Childhood nostalgia coming back.
I kickstarted it.
Did you? Good.
What do you got, Brian? What do you got?
What do I have? I have a few. A couple runners up. One of them is called Super Stud by Paul Feig, the director of.
Nice.
That
book's awesome. Yeah.
Of Crash?
Funny.
So the director you want to...
No, the director of Bridesmaids.
Oh, my bad.
Super Stud is basically what, you know, Freaks and Geeks is based off of. It's Paul Feig's autobiography about him growing up.
What did I say?
You said Fug.
I said Fug?
Yeah.
Feet.
So weirdly.
I was like, wait, are we having Foe?
Foe. It's about him growing up and him not having sex until he was, like, in his late
20s. Nothing wrong with that. Saving himself the right person.
It wasn't that. He tried. But there's so many great, great stories about, like, how, like, I related or something like that. I mean, I lost my virginity earlier on in my teens.
You were 13, weren't you? You were raped by Mrs. Robinson.
I wish, no.
His babysitter.
Shirley.
But yeah, don't call me Shirley. Aha. But yeah, super stud. It's really good. It's really funny. It's adolescence, growing up, teenager, trying to find yourself and be with the opposite sex.
When did you first read that book? I'm just curious.
I read it, probably the first time I read it was 6 years ago.
Okay.
Right after it came out.
Yeah.
But like, I just like totally related to it. It was after I saw Freaks and Geeks. I was like, oh man, this is like... Like Freaks and Geeks.
I think most people discovered it that way.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really funny. This is kind of like growing up. I highly recommend it if you want a good laugh and like, oh, yeah, I went through this.
All these books that I love. I'm like, God, dude, how about this one?
Another one of my runners-up is a book by Warren Ellis called Crooked Little Vein. Oh, it was nice. His first novel. It's really short. Yeah. It's really crazy. It's got something called Godzilla porn in it.
It's true. What is that? What is Godzilla porn?
Some sort of porn.
Godzilla.
Like Japanese people.
Right now,
I don't even know how that would work.
What's really hot right now is Bigfoot. It's Bigfoot.
Bigfoot's big time now.
Sasquatch.
He's in this year.
Erotica?
Yeah.
Sasquatchian porn?
Yeah. Save
me.
And dinosaur porn.
Crooked Little Vein's really good. I picture that the main character who's like a private eye is like Warren Ellis in this book.
I bought that book, but I never read it.
It's so good. It's so short.
Yeah.
And he finds this crazy, like, younger girl, and, like, there's CIA people after him, and they're looking for, like, the new constitution. And they think he has something to do with it, and they go, like, to the underground seedy belly of the city, and it's just, like, real dark and weird and crazy with, like, torture and sex and...
See, I love this common theme.
It's really good.
And Hank the Cowdog.
Yeah, Hank the Cowdog,
no
too.
No raping in Hank the Cowdog, thank God.
So, I'll move on.
You have the later books.
I'll move on to my top, I guess, four. I'll do one. It's a classic, though. But it always stuck with me. It was 100 Years of Solitude. I love that movie.
Oh,
I love
God.
That book.
I could not get through that book.
Really? I love that book so much.
It's a great book, but magical realism is just like...
But see, I love that. Right, that's like my favorite thing. I loved everything about the City of Macondo. I loved it. It just...
You need to read The Night Circus, then.
The Night Circus?
LeVar Burton read that on Reading Rainbow? Like Reading Rainbow?
Of course. 100 Years of Solitude?
Yeah.
Of course.
It's really good. I highly recommend it.
It's about the Kowaki.
Okay,
I'll
Night
make you
Circus.
A list.
Please make me a list.
I know a lot of magical realism.
Put some smear on.
And then I'll go with American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis. This book fucked me up. And like, I love the movie so much, but if they made the movie just like the book, it would be like XXX. Like but it's so well written.
There's a musical that Duncan Sheik did that is coming out on the West End later this year, and it's supposed to be a better adaptation of actual.
Yeah, the American Psycho musical.
Well, doesn't it bring in the brother more? Like, the book is.
Well,
so
you know who the brother is.
Yeah.
He's from Rules of Attraction.
Yeah.
Sean Bateman.
That was the one book I was not allowed to read. My mom never censored.
Rules of Attraction?
My mom never censored my books, ever. She would, like, we read them together, or if I was in soccer, she'd read the book or whatever. But that was the one book I was not allowed to read until I was 18.
Yeah. And so if you watch Rules of Attraction, there's a very small reference to Patrick Bateman, mm-hmm. American Psycho, when James picks up the phone in college and goes, Patrick? But yeah, no, it's really good. American Psycho is just crazy and good and just 80s all around. Like, Bret Easton Ellis, his last couple books since Lunar Park haven't been too great, but I like Lunar Park, but American Psycho is great.
He's one of the better audio...
Yeah.
Like, you hear the music in his book.
Yeah, you do.
That's creepy as shit.
But yeah, that's an amazing book. I highly recommend that one. And then I have two more. One is Bruce Campbell's autobiography called
yes.
If Chins Could Kill.
That is such a
If you love movies, if you love TV, if you like learning about the business and how to make them, he does a great job of telling his life story in movies and being friends in grade school with Sam Raimi. And his stories about making movies, making Evil Dead and Army of Darkness are just brilliantly told through his eyes. And he's a funny man. And one of the stories that stood out is how Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell's friendship is that Sam Raimi did a Western movie called The Quick and the Dead with Leonardo DiCaprio and Sharon Stone.
Gene Hackman.
And Gene Hackman.
Great movie, guys.
And Russell Crowe.
And Russell Crowe. It was a huge, it was like Sam Raimi's like big push to like main Hollywood. Yeah.
Unforgiven. He was trying to like capitalize on the popularity of Unforgiven.
Yeah. So he did this and then he invited Bruce Campbell for the set for a couple days because they've been friends. And Sam got an idea to like, oh, let's put Bruce in the movie. And Bruce like, absolutely. So they spent a day shooting Bruce Campbell in this role where Bruce Campbell's character gets roughed up and beat up. And Bruce at the end of the day is like, oh, let's see the footage. And Sam goes, oh, we weren't filming. We just wanted to give you shit. That's their friendship. It's a great, and they tell you how they made the fake blood to Evil Dead movies. It's just really good. It's a really funny story. And then my favorite book, I think, is Carter Beats the Devil, which came out maybe 10 years ago, called Glenn David Gold, Carter Beats the Devil. And it is a mix between factual history and a magician who goes like murder and everything.
Magician.
It centers around a magician.
He turned into a monkey.
No, he centers around a magician, but he's like goes through like the presidents and everything. It's really good. I highly recommend it. Carter Beats the Devil is amazing. Mm-hmm. If you have not read it, it's a really good book.
That's a good book.
But those are my books.
Great. This is fun.
Those are fun.
Yeah.
So let's move on.
Let's move on to Adam Conway.
And
can't
his
wait.
Classics. Yeah. Tell us all about it.
How much free on your Kindle, Adam?
Oh.
What's a Kindle?
What's a
Nubian? Oh my!
A Mara's reference.
My runners.
That's what I meant. Fuck.
I really love, I guess, I really love, like, you know, detective books and mystery books, but the Fletch series by Greg McDonald.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
It's so good. Why are you laughing at me?
It's underrated. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, the movies weren't as good as the books, I guess, and they've been trying to do a remake.
They did just sign Jason Segel to do Fletch?
No.
Jason Sudeikis.
Yeah.
Same person.
I would rather have Jason Segel. Not the same person. Asshole.
Calm down.
Jason Sudeikis, sir.
I don't know. Jason Sudeikis is kind of like a young man, like a modern day Chevy Chase, like totally overrated, very handsome.
He's really good.
Jason Segel's better.
Yeah, Jason Segel's more of like a Bill Murray.
Then another runner up of mine is a book by Stephen King called The Dark Tower. I guess
so good.
The paintings in the book were just so awesome, and it helped you just visualize that whole story. It's been like what he's 8 chapters in it now, and like it's getting a little ridiculous because he wrote himself into the whole series. So, but the first one, Stephen King
in the book, yeah, Stephen King in the book is played by Stephen King.
But the first one was good story. Yeah, it's getting a little crazy, but yeah. Another. Author from my childhood, Roald Dahl, which was mentioned. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Plus, he did
Charlie
like...
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Charlie. Okay, I thought it was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate
Factory. That's the movie.
Okay.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
What is the name of
the book? Argue books if you'd like.
No, it's fine. I'm sure you are correct. But he did so many other, like, BFG, Matilda, James and the Giant Peach.
Love
like, he did so many other, like, kids' books. Witches, which is such a good book, too.
What was the one that he did? Oh, no, that's not him. Never mind. That was the other one.
Matilda's coming in musical form, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised they haven't done a movie of BFG.
Thanks,
though, so
it is the only one, and it's so good.
They haven't done BFG?
No, not ever.
Oh, I'm thinking Iron Giant. Sorry,
totally. It's a little
not
off.
Not the same person.
Good stuff.
Same type of.
Yeah.
Then one of like books from my childhood also, which has turned into a great movie, Princess Bride by Lynn Goldman. Such a good book.
I've never read that book.
Well, the book and the movie are both so good. That's one of those rare cases where
too bad Peter Falk
really
cannot read it to you anymore.
Yeah.
Since he's,
he should have recorded an audio version.
And then another author who did like mostly sci-fi, Something Wicked This Way Comes, by Ray Bradbury. It was such a good book. You know, it was really creepy. Mr. Dark, you know, come to my carnival and I'll show
you. I still remember where I was when Ray Bradbury died.
Yeah,
like,
it sucks.
I normally don't cry over celebrities because I
that
don't
know. That and Illustrated Man were such ingrained in my childhood. Like, you know, they haven't really done like
The one that was the story about the kids that watch too much TV and then the TV eats their parents.
Was that part of
still
the...
Still living the dream on that
was
one.
Was it part of the shorts? Like Dandelion,
yeah,
Dandelion Wine or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, he was so good, yeah. And I guess they just announced they're doing Disney's remaking Something Wicked This Way Comes. So
really?
We'll yeah.
I didn't hear that.
That movie
That's
was
amazing.
Terrifying.
It is. It is. It's so scary.
That's a good list.
Because he has tattoos of you on his head.
Ray Bradbury.
I love Ray Bradbury. Fahrenheit 451 is such a good book.
And my number two was Jurassic Park, which was already mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
by Michael Crichton. And then for my number one book is a set of novellas by Stephen King called Different Seasons,
ooh,
which gave us Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption, which is The Shawshank Redemption, and then The Body, which is Stand By Me.
The Body.
As well as At Pupil, which was pretty good, the book, and then some other fourth short that no one really cared about. But yes, Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption was such a good movie. I mean, book and movie.
Yeah,
it's
another rare example.
And Stand By Me, you know, it gave us both of those. But yeah, that book I recommend everybody.
Where was The Green Mile? Was that in that series?
No, that was
Stephen King.
It came out as like a set of, you know, short like vignettes, and then they combined
Stephen King, you know, what a
good stuff.
Great writer.
Yes. His 1963 book, quality.
He's still making great books.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a great writer.
He's getting better.
Dr. Sleep?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that's about him, though, is that he can write a really shitty book and then, like, write a really great book.
Like, he's retired five times, but he keeps...
Yeah,
he can't
stop writing.
No writer should.
And his son does really great work, too. I was going to mention... Horns, which was really good.
I love Heart Shaped Box.
Heart Shaped Box is great.
That book scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I was afraid to walk down the dark hall at night because seeing that guy with the scratched out eyes, holy fucking Moses.
That's why I can't read horror, because for some reason I can watch horror just fine, like I can totally separate my brain, but horror books, I'm like, nope.
Because it comes,
I can't get away
from it. It comes
from
your own imagination.
Yeah,
it's a lot scarier than...
Can't do it.
You have bold imagination.
So that's your list?
Yeah, that's my list.
Well, that is our book list. This was a good one this week, guys. And let us know what we missed, what we should read. What we should read again.
Tell us what you've read.
As you wish.
More smut.
What's your list?
Tell more. I'm surprised nobody said like a
Find
pop-up
us on Facebook.
Book or a picture book.
I can't remember.
Truth or Dare Madonna.
I thought about it.
I'm amazed nobody said ghost stories.
And
I do remember
I love ghost stories.
That scared the crap out of me.
The joke books? All right.
But thanks, guys.
Thanks.